Welcome, book friends, to Let's Get Literary, the literary podcast with me, Jen Atwell,
Sam Vega,
and Courtney Berry,
where we discuss some magically meaningful or maybe terrible books each month. Join us for a special chat.
Welcome back, listeners. We're back here for season two. I have the lovely Jen Atwell and Samantha Vega, aka Sam Vega, here with us today. We are recording virtually. I'm excited to see both of their faces, and we're happy to be back on the air with everyone so everybody can listen up for our new book this month. And we are reading You Are Your Best Thing by Tarana Burke and Brené Brown. And I'm going to introduce the new director of the Student Center for Inclusion and Belonging, Samantha Vega. Take it away.
For this book, we are celebrating Juneteenth. Juneteenth marks the end of slavery, specifically within Galveston, Texas. This holiday came about on June 19, 1865, where over 25,000 enslaved Black people in the state were free by executive decree. With that, this book focuses on Black shame and healing with a collection of essays where Tarana Burke and Brené Brown amplify the voices of various authors. Jen, can you read a little bit more about the book?
For years, Tarana Burke and Brené Brown have been working, writing, and talking about shame, resilience, and empathy, both in the context of Tarana Burke's Me Too movement, which seeks justice and healing for survivors of sexual assault, and through Brené Brown's extensive writing and research. Together, they bring their experience and expertise to edit a collection of essays on Black shame and healing. Burke, Brown, and their contributors create a space to recognize and process the trauma of white supremacy, a space to be vulnerable, and affirm the fullness of Black life and Black possibility. Burke writes, "I haven't read many books about the Black experience that get past some of the first layer stuff and really get into the heart work. And I just want us to see ourselves in this differently, to see our insides, the parts that we don't want to show people, the parts that we don't talk about often, the parts that we feel we have to cover and hide and keep away from the world in order to survive, in order to exist. I don't want to talk about my illness. I don't want to talk about my insecurities. I don't want to talk about how this thing really bothers me. But I need to, and I can only do that with some semblance of safety. I want this book to be a soft place to land. Give your humanity breathing room."
What did we think? I loved it. To hear so many different stories was really, really empowering. I think that it was really hard to read a little bit at first, but I also appreciate, I'm going to back this up a little bit, but I also appreciate how Burke and Brown shared their conversation and how this book was created, like the introduction, a conversation of how they came up with this collaboration of essays and authors. And I love the idea of how they began the book and how it started. Were there moments that were really tough to read? Absolutely. But I think it was not so much in a, okay, this is really sad and depressing way, but it was also, there were sad moments, obviously, and there were real moments and real experiences shared throughout this book. However, there was tons of optimism, right? And so while the authors are focusing on the shame experience and the vulnerability piece, which is really tough, they're also highlighting the optimism of healing, right? So like the parts where the authors share these small essays and the individuals are on the way or have healed through this or are in their healing process. And I think that a lot of this comes from obviously childhood trauma, and a lot of this is built on white supremacy and the repercussions of white supremacy. But as a nation, we're healing. As individuals, we're healing. As a community, as a Black community, we are still healing. And it was nice to read. It was refreshing.
I loved this. I felt like I was being let into these people's lives and getting to read private stories from the Black community that I wouldn't have read. I'm not familiar with many of these contributors, this was a book with amazing nuggets in it. And I talk about those things all of the time, but there are so many examples of great things that we can all live by in every section that makes you understand feelings, past experiences from the Black community. But then there's also things that we can all apply to our own lives. I loved this.
And I loved how well they outlined it in the very beginning, you know, during their conversation. And I know Courtney mentioned this, but there were a couple places that I highlighted where they were just in general conversation with each other. And Tarana basically brought up the point where when you're reading these books, it's like, oh, you too, me too. And having that conversation of like, wow, we all have experienced some form of what you're talking about in this specific story. But then having that ending of the conversation with Brené pointing out, we have to know the road if we're going to go back down it and dismantle the systems that led us to trauma. And I think that is probably one of the biggest or maybe largest hurdles for a lot of the anti-racism, DEI and belonging, so diversity, equity, and inclusion work that we're doing, is that, yes, we're revisiting the past, we're revisiting the things that we have experienced or have seen in our history, but we're not always willing to dismantle it. And that's the part that kind of shows throughout some of the stories where they're talking about their experiences, but they also bring about like what could have been better or what can be better for the future, or even where have they gone and where are they doing to be able to help dismantle those different things that they're experiencing.
So I just went through before we started recording and bent all the corners of all of the pages where there was something important, something memorable, something impactful. And when you look at my book, there's so many different pages that I saved. But one of my favorite sections was from Prentice Hemphill on page 50 and 51, where they're talking about healing. Healing brought me into a face-to-face confrontation with belonging, with the strategies I had developed to hide, the stories I told about not needing anyone that made the hiding easier. Healing had me admit that it was closeness I wanted, love and relationship and family who didn't ask me to hide. Now, this entire section is talking about trauma and Black trauma, and it continues in the middle of 51 where I highlighted, this work of healing waits for us in moments of stillness or intimacy, in the persistence of doubt or shame, in our struggles to find or sustain stories of meaning or risk living into our purpose. This section, this person's story, it was so refreshing. Sounds too cool. Sounds cool, like water splashing. Too much of a description of the word refreshing. It was so nice to read someone write feelings about healing, which I don't often read. It just stuck out to me so much, and something that I've come back to a few times since I put this down.
I highlighted that exact section, and I even put like a little bracket around a large section of that, those two pages, and just put oof, because it was just one of those sections that just was like a punch to the gut of, wow, these are a lot of the vulnerability and the openness that this author is putting out there on the table. And I don't know if every reader is going to grasp that, but I hope that they do when they read this story, seeing this person's heart in these pages, literally sharing that vulnerable moment.
Another lovely section. I said this earlier, but I love so many of these stories, so many of these areas, was by Tanya Denise Fields on page 24, and they are talking about language. Language is important, and words mean things. The things they mean can have an insidious effect on how we see the world, ourselves, each other. We use this word deserving a lot, and we think we're really saying something. I deserve to be happy. I deserve a nice apartment. Or I deserve a healthy and successful relationship. But deserving is transactional. It means you did a thing, performed a thing, earned a thing. It requires you to do something in order to get something. And for most of my life, shame robbed me because I thought I didn't deserve shit. And that broke my heart. And it's true. We, in so many ways as people, think that we do not deserve things because we didn't earn it. It's always living up to an expectation. And so that's why we might or might not have gotten something that we wanted. She wrote it down and she shared this, and it was important to remind me that deserving is transactional.
So one of the essays that really stood out to me was Hurt People, Hurt People by Laverne Cox. Those of you who do not know who Laverne Cox is, she is a transgender woman that is an actress, and she has starred in many roles in many films and series, but I think she's most famous for her role in The Orange is the New Black. If you haven't watched it, please do yourself a favor and go watch it. I love it. It's hilarious. It's a real story. I think real moments in that series, or they have real moments. But Laverne Cox highlighted, and she talked about on page, I think it's 164, I don't know how to leave my front door and not armor up. I'm becoming aware of just how automatic it is for me. And it makes me really sad because I would love to let it go. And she continues into the story, just sharing her experience of having her surgery or a surgery and having to go to the pharmacy and pick it up and encountering someone who misgenders her. And then she shares and sheds a little light of how her great-grandfather was a freed man and how a freed Black man in Selma, Alabama, how her grandfather was born on a plantation and suffered from abuse and all these different traumatic situations. And then her grandmother shared stories with her about being abused by her grandfather and how hurt people as a result hurt other people. And I just thought, especially with it being Pride Month too, was a good eye-opening essay. And she also highlighted the fear of transphobia and how it changed her life, but she is now healing from it. So she, in the last paragraph, she says, I don't believe we can have conversations about racial justice or gender justice or class justice if we don't talk about shame and trauma. I don't think it's possible. It's actually necessary.
She shared data supporting her statements. On page 166, violence is violence. Most of the people killing Black trans women are Black men. And I'm not saying this to demonize Black men. I don't want to participate in that, but it's the reality. Let's just talk about what's actually happening. The venom that I've experienced from some other Black folks has often felt like, oh, this is a disgrace to the race. That my transness as a Black person is a disgrace to the race, and that's some white people shit. That is the historic trauma of not the figurative but the literal emasculation of Black men in America. Something that we still need to unpack and heal from. When Black men were lynched, their genitals were often cut off, pickled, and sold. A literal emasculation of Black men. It happened. And then there's me, a Black trans woman, a person who's assigned male at birth. I've often felt the historic trauma of the emasculation of Black men that some folks have projected onto my identity as a trans woman. But my transness is not a result of white supremacist oppression. Trans people have always existed.
And she even expands a little further in the same section that I highlighted that says there's a lot of shame, shaming people for their skin color, for their size, for the way they talk, classism, colorism, misogyny, it is all intersecting, and so it piles up. The work must be to understand that these things are structural, and then we must begin to do the work to stop internalizing all of it.
Tarana Burke and Brené Brown are so amazing for getting these people's stories together.
And I don't think they they clearly understood, but I don't think they even realized how similar all of these authors wrote their stories. You know, even thinking back towards, I think it's the beginning of the book, Austin Channing Brown, when she focuses on the horror movie collections in her bookshelf and her shelves, the entire time she's referencing horror movies. She goes back to, and horror movie is my favorite genre of movie, and like kind of continues to bring it upon in every single section, even looking at Laverne Cox and how she even goes through and shares just her entire story, but focusing on one specific theme throughout. And throughout every single story, there's that one theme that they focus on and kind of follow through the entire thing. I know there was one of them that I thought was so, the way that they wrote it was very poetic, but in no way did they mean it in a poetic way. They just kept repeating the same sentence, and it was a lot like, it's one of these childhood books that we read when we were little. They just kept repeating that same sentence the entire time as they kind of went further and further into their trauma. I don't know, this book was put together in such an amazing way, and I don't know if the authors knew how it was going to be put together, but they did that.
Yeah, they definitely killed it. I think you might be referring to the Unlearning Shame and Remembering Love. Is that it?
Probably.
It resonated with me a lot just because I've heard these phrases and these demeaning and homophobic comments in like the section five of his essay. When you see the bold, "You've got sugar in your tank, boy." That question I've heard a lot. I mean, that phrase, like the reference of having sugar in your tank, I've heard plenty of times in the Black community, just like growing up. And it just makes me, it's like really cringe. It makes me cringe, honestly. And I'm not sure. I mean, I think I know why, but like, I'm not sure why the Black culture and the Black community have such a hard time, especially males, the LGBTQ community. I'm not sure why it's so shameful. I know why, but the emotion of it like leaves me questioning a lot about our community, about my community as a Black woman. It's so shameful. And I've seen family members struggle with coming out. I've seen friends, Black family members struggle with coming out. And it always seems to be a lot tougher in the Black community. And I'm not trying to make it seem like there's a victim or we're the victims or it's victimized, but it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's heartbreaking to know that people struggle with being their true authentic selves and they can't be who they are because our world is so tainted and cultures are so limited in their beliefs and their thoughts that we can't love people no matter what, right? Like there has to be a judgment passed on people because they choose to love somebody that looks like them or that doesn't look like them.
Or choose to exist as they are.
Or choose to exist as they are. That's right.
What's worse is we're entering an era where our young Black and brown kids are slowly being pushed back into the closet, even back in their school. You know, we have in Florida the Stay Woke bill and the Say Gay bill that passed not long ago that was signed. And a safe haven, which was their school, their administrators, people they can talk to, are no longer available to have those conversations because it's now considered illegal to talk about in K-12. So now the only place they have for safety is their colleges. And we're happy to be that safe haven. And I think it becomes a lot harder on the higher education system to have the capacity to support so many kids who are now not able to come out at home or at school or have that same, I don't know, that shame going into it in every aspect of their life. And now, you know, we're at a college campus screaming gay on the middle of the lawn. Like, it's okay to be gay. And these kids are like, what? You know? So I don't know. It's kind of hard to see that side of it. And it's just this consistent battle. How far we get into the acceptance phase, it kind of just pushes us back every once in a blue.
Yeah, my favorite quote, and I'm going to stop after this, but on 163, YOLO continues this conversation in his essay, and he says, "Shame is not your name. Shame is not my name. There's nothing wrong with you. There is nothing wrong with me. We have patterns to unlearn, new behaviors to embody, and wounds to heal. But there is nothing wrong with us. In the core of who we are unlearning generations of shame and remembering love. It takes time, and the time is now. Like, remembering love is like the most important thing. You know, I think we all make mistakes. We're human, right? We hurt people's feelings. We say things we don't mean sometimes. We run red lights. We run yellow lights. We yell at the person in front of us for cutting us off. We are impatient. We're just so worldly, right? But remembering love is huge because people lack love every single day in their life. And we are in a state of lack. Our world is in a state of lack. Our universe is in a state of lack. And we don't function out of love anymore. At least I don't see it. I mean, I see it in my world, but I don't see other people receiving love. You know, you walk down the street and you pass somebody and they're not smiling. You walk down the street, you pass somebody and they're flicking you off or saying something mean. Or you're driving and somebody's yelling at you. I mean, I think the biggest takeaway from this book, at least for me, was to remember how to love people and love people unconditionally and without conditions.
This kind of connects. On page 68, Mark Lamont Hill is talking about love and existing. The first thing was in paragraph 2. I was loved, deeply, but we lived in a world framed by suffocating ideas about who a person, who a black person, who a black man needed to be in order to be safe and happy. This world held few safe spaces for little black boys who moved through the world in ways I was naturally inclined to move. So I learned to move differently. I learned not to cry. Skipping a couple paragraphs. We just wanted to live. We just wanted to be loved well. We wanted to be seen. We wanted to be respected. We wanted to be human. We just wanted to be loved well. It's heartbreaking.
That was a great quote to bring about, Jen. I think in short, we can say the world needs more love. And with that, we will share our emoji and star rating. Courtney, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So my star rating is 5 out of 5. And the emoji that I picked is the megaphone with the confetti coming out of it to celebrate Juneteenth and healing. Healing for all.
I'll go next. My star rating would be 4.5 out of 5 stars. And my emoji would be one of the newer ones, the hand heart emoji.
And for me, also 5 out of 5. And my emoji will be the explosion. All right, listeners, I think it's time.
GTFM.
Bye.
Let's Get Literary is co-hosted by Sam Vega, John Atwell, and Courtney Berry at Rollins College. Each month, you'll find a new episode on a book we've chosen for many of the Cultural Heritage Months. On occasion, we might choose a special and meaningful book to us to discuss. We'll chat about books and give you a sneak peek into what we'll be discussing next.